Good afternoon. It's Friday Farm News here on the Red River Farm Network. We'll have an update from Megan Turnquist, and Randy Conan is reporting from the U.S. Custom Harvesters Convention. Friday morning at the U.S. Custom Harvesters Convention began with the Board of Directors meeting with vendors, followed by state meetings. Red River Farm Network's Randy Conan has more.
The state meetings allow for the custom harvesters to talk with each other about state or regional issues that they're facing. USCHI Treasurer and Vice Presidential Candidate Dane Dolichek says the state meetings are an important way to keep other harvesters abreast of the latest state regulations.
Whether it be issues like facing with the getting the DMV, getting our licenses, stuff like that, or more specific state laws, you know, getting some of those other outlying states where they have multiple states, you know, maybe they can't get quite as specific, but it's just kind of things that overall are facing the industry, can people can ask questions and get a little more board relationship answer. We have a board member in each meeting, and then with the opportunity to break it down on a more regional or you know more personal level to address those issues.
The U.S. custom harvesters are also careful to listen to their vendors. USCHI board member and vice presidential candidate Rafe Jolliffe says the board actively seeks input on ways to improve the trade show.
As an organization, our convention doesn't happen without the vendors, without our sponsors. They're the ones that get us here. They're the ones that pay for the rooms and make this happen. So absolutely, you better take care of the guys that are taking care of you, making it happen for you.
Well, let's talk about convention. Pretty decent numbers?
You know, honestly, it is. We were a little concerned getting this far off the beaten path, how many people follow us down here. But as far as members showing up down here, the numbers are right on track. Vendors were down like 10. So coming all the way to Hot Springs, Arkansas, we consider that a really good turnout.
Elections for the custom harvesters will be held at their annual business meeting Saturday afternoon. Reporting from Hot Springs, Arkansas, and the 2020 USCHI Annual Convention for the Red River Farm Network, I'm Randy Conan.
Thanks, Randy. Past president and USCHI board advisor Jim Dibert says the 2019 harvest was one for the record books.
It was good to get it done with. I guess my favorite day was the last one. But we had a good harvest. We had trouble in Texas with wet weather. We had trouble in North Dakota with wet weather. Crop problems as far as scab and vomitoxin and sprout damage, you know, and it was the worst harvest I ever had in North Dakota. But, you know, life goes on and we got through it. And the people I've just talked to, they may finish today with their corn harvest in western southwestern North Dakota.
Dibert says he will harvest fewer wheat acres in 2020.
There's a big switch to corn in the Midwest, and we have lost a lot of our wheat, big wheat acres. There's a lot of farmers in my community that farm thousands of acres that don't have 1 acre of wheat now. And it's kind of become the pariah of crops to a lot of people. Yet we had some of the best wheat crop we ever had last summer. So, it'll come back.
There's an old saying that dragons have long tails. Dakota Agronomy Partners Minot location small grains manager Jeff Heil says that holds true in 2019. Harvest seemed to never end.
Unfortunately, the wetness allowed us or didn't allow us to get out there and do any fall fertility. It was even difficult to get out there and do soil sampling, but we managed to get out there even into December, as much as we could before the ground froze up, to at least get the soil sampling done so that we can have, hopefully, an early jump this coming spring to at least know what type of fertility to put down, which helps set these guys up and gives them an idea as far as if they can stick to the rotation or if they got to make some alternative switches with different crops.
In difficult years, Heil says farmers must be in business with optimism. There are options come spring with the diversity of crops grown in North Dakota.
That's the beauty of being out here in the western part of North Dakota is that we're so diverse. Our elevator guys, they always say, well, when are you guys going to settle down and just sell this and just sell this instead of us handling 13 different commodities? Well, that's the beauty of it. They have options. And so, again, that's what our agronomists and our sales staff people do is they go out there and they work with these customers and growers and give them those options. Working with their, you know, from their fertility to their seed to their crop protection and offering a finance program to help them. Just kind of a one-stop shop and bundle it all together to make it simple.
Heil attended the KMOT Ag Expo in Minot this week. There's been lots of volatility in the grain markets. This morning, Bauer Trading market analyst Jim Bauer says the grain markets were trying to find some footing.
Seems like things are okay, but there's just enough worry out there that the volume is light and everybody's kind of sitting back waiting to see what's going to happen over the weekend. And I suspect Monday could be kind of a pivotal day as far as price discovery, because I think today a lot of the traders and brokers and analysts and marketers are going to kind of hold back until they see which way this whole situation is going to go concerning the virus. Now, there's any number of opinions on that, and they seem to have calmed things down a little bit.
USDA will release a biannual cattle report this afternoon. The report will discuss changes at the cow-calf sector that has clear implications for cattle prices in 2021 and 2022. Commodity Risk Management Group market analyst Mike North says traders are trying to get their heads wrapped around how much of the breeding herd was kept.
You're looking at guesses that maybe 3.5% of the heifer supply was cut. Because frankly, you know, as we talk about the possibilities, and again, this China deal kind of lingers over all of our markets, but as we talk about the possibilities of a deal with China, as we talk about, you know, where we're at in terms of overall head counts, you know, we've continued to keep moving animals into the feedlots. Some of that growth is on, you know, as a function of heifers moving into the slaughter lineup.
North says that number could be supportive for the cattle markets. Some market analysts are gearing up already for the February supply-demand report. According to Bloomberg, the February report will factor in all provisions of the China deal that are publicly available. A USDA spokesperson says analysts will consider China's demand in light of the trade deal to develop estimates, and the USDA will issue a white paper explaining the approach soon. WASDE report is out on February 11th. This is the Red River Farm Network. Good afternoon, Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. To reduce the impact of speculators, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission is now limiting the number of contracts a single participant can hold. The rule limits the size of the position to 25% of the deliverable supply of each commodity. This rule passed on a party-line 3-2 vote. The Dodd-Frank law called for new federal limits 10 years ago, but lawsuits prevented the previous CFTC action. There continues to be advancements in the way that farmers farm, especially when it comes to precision agriculture. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Megan Turnquist has the story.
The past, present, and future of precision agriculture has many similarities and differences. As a whole, it's about leveraging data and technology to make better decisions, while also improving profitability and sustainability. Those words come from Terry Eberhardt, who manages Eberhardt Farms near Langenberg, Saskatchewan.
For me, it's just about having more of that abundance mindset. I think there's a lot of amazing things about our culture of agriculture, but there's also maybe I would say old school mindsets where people are worried about sharing their success or worried about sharing with their neighbors because they feel like we're in competition. But I look at it in the way that, you know, the more we can learn and share together, we're just trying to stay alive and farming a lot of times.
Eberhardt goes on to say there are long-term positive returns on investment with variable rate technology.
You know, we do have areas that are lower producing, typically saline and low wet areas, and simply there's accumulation of nutrients there, and under flat rate programs, you actually continue to compound that problem. So when we start reducing our inputs in those areas, especially nitrogen, we found over time we're actually increasing yield because we're lowering that salt load or we're not compounding it anymore. So that's been a really positive example where we're putting on less and getting more.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, I'm Megan Turnquist on the Red River Farm Network.
Thanks, Megan. Eastern Minnesota hog farmer Lori Stevermer says African swine fever was a topic during the Minnesota Pork Congress this week. Local producers are implementing the Secure Pork Supply Plan.
It's really just taking a look at your farm and practices and biosecurity and things that we can do should there be some type of foreign animal disease event. I would say, as a rule, farmers work pretty closely with their veterinarians, so they're trying to stay current on, you know, current vaccination programs, which, you know, we don't have a vaccine for African swine fever, but just in general, communicating with veterinarians and, you know, really looking to put into place as many biosecure programs practices on their farm as possible.
Deaver Murr left Port Congress early to witness the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement signing. She says the USMCA provides market certainty for U.S. pork producers.
Canada and Mexico are really two big export markets for us. 40% of our exports go to those two countries. So to have the certainty that we'll have exports with them and trade without any types of tariffs, you know, really, like I said, it provides that certainty that we need in the future.
While custom harvesters attend educational seminars, the talk always comes back to what the crop will look like next. U.S. Custom Harvesters board member David Meisner says there's some optimism about the wheat crop in Oklahoma this year.
There was a lot of wheat that was put in good and timely, but then we had cold air there in October, and it really slowed that wheat down, and then some of the wheat didn't get planted until November, the winter wheat. So when you go out there and look, none of that wheat's very tall. But all in all, we've had some moisture here in the end of December, January already, that the wheat's got moisture. So we have a potential here, and yeah, time to put fertilizer down.
Meisner says the crop hasn't broken dormancy yet. The North Dakota Department of Agriculture extended the deadline for its Emergency Feed Transportation Assistance Program. Farmers and ranchers have until March 2nd to submit eligible expenses to the State Agriculture Department. With the program, eligible producers can be reimbursed for feed transportation costs that took place between September 30th and February 20th. A friendly reminder to learn more about the Red River Farm Network, visit Facebook and Twitter. You can also find stories, podcasts, and more at RRFM. Reporting agriculture's business, this is the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Let's catch up with Ag Week reporter Mikkel Pates. Mikkel, what do you have for us on the cover of Ag Week for next week?
Well, this is kind of another look at the Red River diversion in Fargo-Moorhead that is going to be, protecting, more than 230,000 people that live around here, but also has impacts on farmers. And so it's a visit with a couple of the people that are impacted by this and whose lives are kind of on hold for a time as their businesses are affected by this water retention. And so people who have never had floods before will be inundated with water from, this project. And it's a massive project and sort of a look at how big it is and how it affects people. The people that have businesses and so on there are affected by this, just like somebody that is affected by an interstate highway that comes through or some other kind of project. And, of course, they have to wonder whether their economic, lives are disrupted to benefit other people. But everybody's all kind of intertwined in interesting ways. A lot of the people that whose property is affected might also live in Fargo or may have, spouses or others that are involved in Fargo. So, it's kind of one of those kind of intertwined projects.
Well, Mikkel, sounds interesting. Looking forward to reading about it next week's Ag Week.
Taking a look at the markets before we leave you this afternoon. March Minneapolis wheat down 3 3/4 at 532 3/4. March Chicago wheat down 5 3/4 at 554 3/4. March Kansas City wheat down 7 1/4 at 463 3/4. March corn up 1 3/4 at 381 1/4. July corn up 1 1/2 at 391. March beans down 2 at 874 1/4. July beans down 2 at 902 1/4. In livestock markets, we're seeing some mixed action here at midday. February live cattle down 10 cents at 121.67. April down 25 cents at 119.95. January feeder cattle up 35 cents at 142.45. March feeder cattle up 62 cents at 136.27. February lean hogs down $3.60 at 57.70. April down $3.57. Taking a look at the farm calendar, February is practically here. The Soil Health Talk Cafe discussions will continue in Jamestown on Monday. American Crystal Sugar Company Grower Seminar will take place here in Grand Forks as well on Monday. And then on Tuesday, the Northern Corn and Soybean Expo taking place in Fargo. This is the Red River Farm Network.